Hey everyone, welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hey, Becky.
And Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Becky.
And coming in hot as a hot mess express is Leah, who brushed her hair.
Hi.
Because if you've seen her this morning, she was scary.
She usually has a hat on.
Oh, you should have seen me this morning, though. I mean, the first time I talked to Becky this morning, I did have my hat and my coat hood on, like I was all zipped up. And then when I talked to her later, I had taken the hat off, but it was still not good. So I have started calling the way I dress my homeless chic.
Yeah.
But let me tell you a little story first, and then we can get into the episode. So one of my friends, like we were at swim practice and we have an Aldi that's like right by the aquatic center. And so she's like, I went to the Aldi. She's like, I saw somebody who I could have sworn it was you. She's like, she had like a beanie on and her hair was this like kind of the same. She was dressed like similar to you and had like a really nice pair of Chucks on. She's like, I almost went up to this girl. She's like, because then I realized she was a girl. But she had her like septum pierced and I have no facial piercing. She's like, yeah, I realized it wasn't you. I'm like, oh, so she was rocking the homeless chic too. That makes me feel like I'm doing something right. But yeah, so anyway, but it was a rough day today. We'll just say that.
She goes, I blame
our dear Maisie Yates.
Yes. So that was my purpose in mentioning it is, you know, the cover of this book is cute. Like, it's pink
adorable,
and green,
it
and it looks like
deceiving.
Hollywood Lights. And
yeah, that's a heavy book.
And it's like...
So let me say, like, I'm having a week. We have a lot of stuff going on, like, family-wise and emotionally. I cried, no joke, through, like, 70% of this book. Like, I wasn't, like, ugly crying through a lot of it, just maybe only about 10%. But there were tears in my eyes for, like, 70% of this book.
I mean,
that's fair.
And like you, I'm deep in my feels. I cried. Now, Amanda, she said.
No, I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm dead inside at this point. You know, I mean,
she
I got emotional.
Disconnected.
I got emotional. I mean, I felt it, but yeah, I mean. But to be fair, it takes a lot to actually genuinely make me cry, like big tears. Like every now and then I'll tear up or I'll be like, you know, clutch my chest, that kind of thing or whatever. But I mean, it takes a lot to make me like full on cry from a book.
Fair.
So
fair. Okay.
That is fair.
So we are here for our Wednesday night format, our sip and discuss episodes, our book club stylings, where we talk about a book. This book is going to be spoiled. So if you have not read this book, you might want to stop, read the book, and then come back. Or listen, if you're on the fence about reading it, feel free to listen through. Just know we are going to spoil it.
Yeah.
So we have some enchanting details about this book to share. Who would like to share them?
I can do it.
Okay, go for it, Amanda.
Sorry. Okay, things to know before we start. The release date was January 1st, 2025, so this is really new. The tropes are close proximity, second chance at love, a fling, enemies to lovers vibes with a dash of reluctant friendship. This is a standalone. It's not part of a series as far as we know. The POV is single first person. Putout percentage is 41%. The audio narrator, if you did the audiobook, was Stephanie Rose. This is available for read and listen in KU. It was published by Montlake. Content warnings on this are grief, loss of a spouse, loss of a late-term pregnancy, and wildfires, which that one, that part kind of hit me. I was yeah. not expecting the wildfires,
I was like, wow. Well, and I was like, how crazy. Like,
yeah.
We know this book was written a while ago since it's a Montlake book.
Yeah.
And like, and all of that. Stuff was happening.
She talks about how she was inspired. They stayed at kind of a roadside motel, her son and her, as they were waiting to go on a cruise together. She was taking him on a mom-son trip on a cruise out of the port in San Diego. And so they stayed at this like kind of kitschy motel before they went on the cruise. And it inspired this story, and she tried to sell it to her editor, and HQN said, nah, we're going to pass. She sold it to Montlake, which, great for her. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
But I do have a bit of a bone to pick with Maisie about this because, and I know it's trad pub, so it gets traditional published author. I consider Montlake one of the big publishers, right? Like,
yeah.
They on a market, right? But I think it's really important to remember authors don't have a lot of control about trigger warnings into their trad pub books. But nowhere in any of Maisie's marketing, nowhere anywhere, and I didn't go scrounge her website to see if she had them on there, but I couldn't just like,
they're not.
There are no trigger warnings there. No. This book needed trigger warnings because.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just for the wildfires, especially what's going on in California right now, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're in California and you read this, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry because I didn't know until I picked it up last week.
Yeah, this book is, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's heavy.
It was a lot, but I don't, it is a lot, but I don't feel like it was too much. Like, you know how sometimes get an emotional book that triggers on a couple of different levels. So like on this one, we have grief.
Yeah.
You know, both of them have experienced loss of a relationship. He experienced loss of a spouse. She experienced loss of a pregnancy, a child. So even if we go into grief, sometimes we get books that pile on the sadness to show love shines through, you know, even in your darkest moment kind of thing. And sometimes it feels like things are put in just for that shock value.
Right.
But I don't feel like anything in this felt shock value.
But I feel like the way this book was structured, like the grief and like the sad was like the main gist of it. And like the funny moments were those interwoven pieces. Like typically like when you read a romance, like it's more like the gentle is the book and then like the sad is like the random like pieces added in.
Yeah.
I feel like this one, she worked it differently. And had she not, I don't think the book would have worked as well, especially with as heavy as their grief was, because they were both still like very, very in like in the grief fog.
Well, and let's talk about their meet cute. The first one, like,
okay.
She recognizes him. He comes into that lobby to check in. She knows who it is. She's really excited. And he basically, he has like the Jenny like fortress. Yeah. Like,
yeah, don't he's touch, very don't talk. Standoffish.
Like,
he probably had that moment where he was like, no clue who you're talking about. Like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, and I think we find out later what his headspace was when he came in there. So she wraps that back around so that you understand exactly why he was acting that way.
And I think she did a really good job of that. So some of those early moments that you're kind of like,
he's just kind of an asshole.
It took three visits for them to actually have a conversation.
Well, like it was the second one,
I guess.
Yeah.
Because that was the fires, when he helped with the fires.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, as we were talking about, like, the grief going throughout, like, that grief actually, like, helped move the story along because it forced him to do something.
Yeah.
Well, and, like, there's timeline jumps, but the timeline jumps make sense. So, like, you get the, like, when they first meet and there's very limited interaction there, like, with her and him. But then the next chapter is the next year when he like basically when he's checking in again. And so I think that's part of it too, is like you first meet him and you think, oh man, this guy's gonna be like one of those asshole characters where like he's gonna have like trauma in his background. You like have to figure out why he is the way he is, but then you find out why he is the way he is and you're like, ooh.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was gonna be like his whole military team, like,
yes.
And, you know.
And I just kept thinking this is going to be like some parent trauma, like his dad was a dick and made him do like wildlife survival as a teen or some shit. I mean, and that's why he's so repressed. Trauma,
but that was not his
not to that extent.
Yeah. I really thought that it was going to be like parent, you know, trauma, repressed trauma that he never dealt with his parents or something, you know.
Well, and Stacy mentions in the comments she didn't even know if he knew her name until like a third of the book in. And honestly, that was one of my favorite parts where she's like, does he even know my name?
That walk that they take to the grocery store.
Yeah.
When they come up with the idea of like, let's fake date, which I didn't even put that as a trope because I don't even feel like that was a trope in this book.
No, it wasn't.
There was no fake.
It was the chapter heading, I think, for that one. Though.
Right. Well, and someone mentioned that over in Discord. I think it was Sue mentioned she felt like the what trope was kind of going to be discussed in the chapter of the book, that that really bugged her. She didn't care for that. And I can respect that. And there is,
It worked for me.
It worked for me too.
But I think that for us, for what we do, you know, the fact that we dissect books and we talk about tropes and how they move the story along, I don't know that the average reader loves tropes as much as we love tropes, guys.
Maybe that's fair.
I mean, I think it was the way that it was introduced, though, because like each chapter has its own trope setting.
But it's not every chapter.
It's not every chapter, but it also wasn't like a huge focus of the book either. You know what I mean?
Well, and another like, focus. Like,
it helped move the story along. And I think that that was the thing, too. Like, it's such a heavy story. She had to find like little tricks to move this along so it wasn't so heavy at the same time.
Well, and I kind of also saw it as like a learning device. The nerd in me, like somebody that doesn't read books like we do, like, hey, look, this is what this trope is.
It kind of helps define some things. But the other thing, and I noticed I was on Threads and Maisie had made a comment that she was getting critiques and criticism from people like on the KDP publishing Facebook feed or the advertisements for the book, that people were commenting that they weren't going to even read it because here it is, a romance book where the main character is a romance author. That's so meta. And I will be honest, in the past, I am really critical of that because I feel like, how many books have we read lately where the heroine is a romance author? Like, come on, people. There are so many other jobs that you can work from home or work in solitary that you don't have to be an author. Do you know what I mean? But I felt like the fact that he was this huge James Patterson commercial success author versus her category author, I felt like that was perfect. Like, it worked so well. And I don't know that the story would have had the impact if she hadn't been an author and he hadn't been an author. Like, I don't think you'd get like the same thing if she was a doctor and he was a nurse. You know what I mean?
Like, you and I were talking earlier, though, like, she was a writer, like, when she lived in L.A. Like, she wrote for TV and, like, did screenplays and did things like that. So it was a natural progression of, like, where she changed her profession, but she didn't change her profession at the same time, like, when she ran away from L.A. Like, so it worked well with her past, too, because had she been something different, like, it wouldn't have made sense for her to be that. Like, she already was a writer, just a different style of writer, so it was an easy transition.
Amanda, what are your feels on the she's a romance author vibe?
I loved it in this book. I really think that it worked, especially like, you know, highlighting them as different people, and how they, you know, kind of still had the same feelings about certain parts of writing. But I don't mind it as much in a book. It really doesn't bug me unless it's just super cliche. But I didn't get any of that here. I really liked how it worked within the story.
And I think if you like the author uses it to their advantage, because there's a Samantha Cole book where she is a romance author, and like that is how she goes to the, like, that's why she goes to the club, is to like to do research for her book. So I think if it makes sense with the way it's introduced.
Wait. So if I go to the sex club, I can say it's research for the podcast?
I mean, sure, we we can write that off too.
Let's take a road trip, guys. Gonna find a
club.
I don't
know where we're road tripping to, but
Jenny is. Jenny was all in because her brain went there too.
I mean, yes. Yes, it did. But anyway, I'm just saying.
And Amanda's over there like, I don't do crowds or people, so I'm out.
I'll watch you guys from afar. Let me know how it goes.
I'll stay on the balcony.
It would be acceptable for you to like walk to the door and run away at that point.
Yes, yes.
It would be acceptable behavior.
She can pick us up.
Dee Dee. So another criticism of this book, because so Nathan's character, it's single POV. This book is fully written. This is Amelia's story. This is Amelia's journey. But it's also Nathan's. Like, but we don't get his point of view. And we've talked about this in the past. Sometimes we miss it. Sometimes we don't. In this book particularly, do you feel like there were moments where you're like, I really wanted to know what his heart was thinking? Or do you think Maisie did a great job and you didn't have any lingering moments where you were like, oh, I really wish I knew what was going on with him?
Can I say yes and no?
Yes.
Because there were times where like I felt like if we had got his point of view, it would have been beneficial to the story, but at the same time, I don't feel like I needed his point of view. Like when they were hiking, or like when they took the first hike to the Joshua tree, like I would have liked to see like his feels in that moment, but I also think that like her reaction to him and how closed off he is made sense with the way his character was created.
What about you, Jenny? Did you miss his POV?
Like when the book was first starting, I kept like thinking, like, are we gonna get his? But along the same lines, like, I don't think he knew enough about like what was going on in his head that it wouldn't have been like repetitive.
Yeah. What about you, Amanda? Did you miss it? Mind it? Kind of.
I think like Leah, I think there were a couple of points where it would have been beneficial. My only real one was at the very end.
Yes.
Because I thought it was, I thought it was really like it happened really fast and we're at 93% and he's still saying we can't be together and he's going to leave.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait like, a minute. You know, I was like, so I,
when
I
he
really
drives
wanted,
away.
Yeah.
Like,
I
would have
wanted
liked
in
like
his
that.
Head, like at that moment, probably. And that could have been it. Like that would have really, I think that for me would have been where I wanted it.
My moment
like a,
was
like a 3-page like him driving away and having this like aha moment I would have been good with.
My moment for me was when he was in his room and she finds him drunk.
I
mean at that point in the book I think that there were like huge tears coming down my face. I was deep in my feels at that moment.
I was already a mess.
Like there was no not crying at that point. But I would have liked to have understood. I find this is so like kind of morbid. I find grief slightly fascinating how different people deal with grief. Like, you know, when my dad died, I used humor. Like people would call and ask my dad and I would be like, dude's dead. He's not here. Thanks for calling. Or, you know, something would come up. My mom would be stressed and upset. And I'd say, oh, let's go throw rocks at his grave. Dude is dead. And so he was so, like, he, like, kind of shut himself off.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling that in his grief, he didn't have community. The closest thing he had community to was the pink flamingo. And he wasn't really connecting with them. So his grief was isolating. And I would have just liked that moment. You know, that's where story mechanics like a best friend or text conversation come into play. And I just wish I'd had that moment.
But I think the fact that his grief was so isolating, it worked that we didn't get his thought process.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about the setting of the Pink Flamingo, which was its own character all on its own. The way she opens up talking about how she stumbled upon the listing and decided that could be her
yeah.
Because never do I look at roadside motels and think that's my place. That's my community. I'm going there.
I will say, though, when you are in that moment, you think about like what you could do to make your life completely different.
Yeah. And this was completely different from her Hollywood life.
Yeah.
And I love the characters of the Pink Flamingo, her best friend and her daughter. And in the end, when you find out that she had named the child she lost Emma, and then her best friend that she made friends with like had little cry. Emma, like had Emma, I'm like, what? Talk about meta. That's where the meta is. Like, you're supposed to be in that moment, I guess.
That was a rough part of the book.
But okay, first of all, as we were going through the story, I thought for sure one of the old ladies was going to die, and I was like getting ready to be angry.
Why would you even put that in the universe?
I would have had to DNF it. I'm sorry. If that had happened, I would have been like, sorry, I'm not going to be on Wednesday. That?
But there were conversations where like, have you seen Gladys? Or have you seen Alice? And they kept talking about their ages. And I'm like,
I love Alice. So Becky has claimed Gladys. I am claiming Alice. I love Alice.
Yeah.
I feel like if my life was a little different, I would be an Alice in my future. She is a mighty oak.
I'll be Wilhelmina.
Wilhelmina.
She's okay too.
I'll be the dude.
The dude.
Alfred.
Albert.
Is it Albert or Alfred?
I think it's Albert.
It starts with an A.
The moment where
I did love that point when they're in the pool and she's like, I'm stuck, like my necklace is stuck, and he like jumps into the pool, and that's the first time anybody gets like a look at his physique, and they're like, oh my.
Oh, and they broke the washer, like they unscrewed the washer so it wouldn't work.
You're not gonna figure that out
Like, but so those ladies they weren't even trying. Like, what was the one in the lobby? What happened in the lobby? Something that they did. I don't know. Those ladies.
One of them passed out.
That's what it was.
Oh,
that's what it was.
It was Gladys because he had to catch her.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And she's like, I would have liked mouth to mouth. They were so naughty, but they were so delightful. But, you know,
but they were such a strong.
Oh, the dancing.
Like, they just were such a strong, safe space for her, too. Yeah. And I think that was one of the best things about these characters. Yes, they had, like, their crazy antics and things like that. But, like, she really connected with these people and they're her grief, which she needed.
Well, and there's that conversation that she has with Gladys and Alice by the pool after he's said, you know, we're never going to be together.
Yeah.
I'm when I leave here, I'm not coming back. And, you know, she realizes that in her own way, she had created some walls and some isolation and hadn't, you know, these people were living in her space and she was creating community, but she wasn't fully sharing everything that was going on in her heart or what she had come from, because none of them knew about Christopher, which, I mean, dude deserved like waterboarding and swirlies for being an asshat. And we'll get back to him in a second. But, you know, that conversation that Alice and Gladys, and they talk about their great loves and, you know, what their next phase in life looked like and where they saw themselves going. And first of all, kudos to Alice for admitting that she went a little bit wild after the death of her spouse. She made sure everyone knew. She tried a couple dudes out to make sure to scratch the itch.
they just were so real.
So like, real.
They showed her and told her like the grief is okay. The grief will always be there. It's what you do with the grief.
Yeah.
In the long run. That makes the difference.
Yep. And then Alice and her Gladys and her singing and her sparkly dresses.
Yeah.
Like, I just loved her so much.
I just think it's so funny that they were like, Albert is like on the run from the law or something, or Alfred,
Yes,
whatever his name is.
that's like I'll
They
be
like,
him.
they don't really know like what's like his background, but then like when in the epilogue, when he's gonna officiate, she's like, how can you do that if you're running from the law?
He's not
That's
running from
funny.
the law. So let's talk about Christopher's character and how that thread was woven into this story. Because it ends up not just being about the grief of loss, but it's also the grief of like past mistakes. Like we mourn our mistakes and you think you've moved on, but then your past is thrust in your face and you realize that, oh, I haven't really ever dealt with that feeling. And I feel like that's what we got with the character of Christopher. She ran away from her life that crumbled in Los Angeles because she talks about how she didn't really keep in touch with friends that were her friends there, that Christopher got them all in the breakup.
Well, so they, what happened? They lose the baby, and then it's, I think it's like a cut like 2 or 3 months after that they lost this baby. So like she is still like in her fog of chaos, and she comes home because her flight was canceled, and she finds him having sex with somebody in their house.
I did
Their
appreciate that
bed
his new fiance and
is
that's
not the
pregnant
same
is
person.
not the same pregnant or is not the same person that he got caught knocking boots with. I did
I
appreciate that.
appreciate that too.
Me too.
But so like she even says, she's like, she didn't really ever break up with him. She just left. Like she was done because,
Yeah. But then, she also like self-reflects on their relationship and, her, not necessarily that she had anything to do with, the fact that he cheated, but the fact that they had problems before this ever happened, and they probably wouldn't have still been together.
Well, and I do want to say that it's very true that the woman who is like loses the baby, especially, not that a loss is a loss, it doesn't matter when, and I'm not discounting like early term losses, but when you
I
have a
agree.
late term loss like that, the way that you grieve and the way your partner grieves is very, very different because you connected with that kid, like you connected with the baby, you felt the baby, like you did all of that, and they only got a minute part of that. And I will say, the divorce rate and breakup rate after that type of loss is like 75 to 80%. It is very, very high. And so it's not surprising that it worked out the way that it did in this book. And it is one of those things, like you grieve very, very differently, like in the moment, and also years later, like you still continue to grieve differently.
That was something I thought of like throughout the book because I mean obviously like grief's the tying like thread through the whole thing is even if you lose the same person as somebody else or like you're grieving the same person that's lost if that makes sense like say we both lose a child or like we lose a mother and like your siblings like even if you lose the same person it's not the same.
It's
It's
not.
like no matter what, like it's not the same for anybody. And I think she did a really good job of reflecting that.
So this was kind of a little bit of a slow burn romance. I mean, it popped at
It pops at
41.
41%, but the way the story plays out, like it seems slow.
It
Well, and
seems,
it's also what, 3.5 years late?
Yeah, with the time jumps.
But I feel like with the emotions that was happening here and the fact that it's love through grief, it's love after loss, I think we needed it to be a slow burn. And I'm a hater on a slow burn, y'all know that. But I think this book had to be that way. We had to have these more emotional connections because then we could just laugh in the face of every time he's like, it's just a fling.
Yeah. And then I think too, with the fact that, you know, when you find out his first visit is only 4 months after his wife has passed and he's gone through however long she was sick, and like, you know, so he's been in that for a while, and it was very fresh. And I think when you find that out too, it even reinforces that that's the way it had to happen.
Well, and the fact that like he was only there because of his wife.
Yeah.
Like she like wanted him to write this book that he is writing. Like he is doing it for her. Like she made the reservation. Like she picked the place. And so like there was a lot of her attached to all of it. And 4 months out, like you're, especially when she was a great love, like you are
Yeah. Yeah, and that seemed
not.
like I just had the realization as you were like say that, like I would be so picked. Like, you want me to write your book? Like, you stay here and you write your book.
Yeah, I feel like there'd be a lot of like the anger would be very prevalent. That stage would be like front and center for a while.
Yeah, and he's very angry.
He's very
Yeah.
angry.
And then he runs into someone he's attracted to, like 4 months out from the
Well,
love
and
of
that
his
just
life.
pisses him off
Yeah, so he's
more.
even more angry about that.
I think that's the thing too. Like he's just really mad about the fact that he is attracted, which I mean they talk about it too, but it's like it's so frustrating for him that like he could possibly be attracted to somebody else.
Yeah, that's one of like at the end, that's one of my favorite lines when he's like, I don't want to love you.
Yeah.
When he
Great.
comes back,
Thanks.
when he comes back and he's like, look, I don't want to love you. And I'm
Yeah.
like, dude, that might be the
That's who,
worst
that's
I
why
love you ever.
I wanted in his head so bad in that scene. Like I really did.
I think
Yeah.
that's fair. And the epilogue is a wedding. And I did like the little side love story of her best friend and the mechanic. And that, you know, it's kind of that shadowing of this guy saw me at my worst and says that he can still love me and see that I'm not always at my worst. And I felt like that was like supposed to be like a shining beam at Amelia. It took her a minute to kind of
Yeah.
grasp that there were some parallels between, but you know, you were seeing him at his worst. You were seeing Nathan at his worst versus her.
Well, but there's a lot of little things that happens through the book that like it shows how much he really does care. Like, dude spent like 10 grand on a flamingo Christmas tree in the Christmas tree auction.
Yeah,
And
but he had to
because
beat
the ex
Christopher.
was bidding and he could not let him win.
Yeah, that's what I was like, dude.
You love her.
You need to
Yeah.
have like a heart to heart with yourself.
Yeah, you need to find Jesus all by yourself, dude.
I will say too, one of my favorite parts of the book is when they go to her hometown, like to her mom's
Yeah.
house.
Oh, yeah.
Like she's like, I need to go see my mom. Like I need to like to go. And they go there. And she sees the house and she's like, I don't need to do this.
Yeah.
I thought that was just really like profound.
Well, it's coming to the realization that there was a reason you cut this person out, and there's a reason this person stopped showing up for you. And it's kind of that moment in your brain that clicks that says, it's okay if I stop showing up for them. Like sometimes you doubt, did I make the right choice cutting that person out of my life? Is this the right path for me? So then you see them, or you have an interaction, or you hear something about them, and you think, yep, I was right to cut that time. So I really felt that was powerful in this book, and showing it also kind of shows her growth a little bit too,
Oh, yeah.
because I think in the beginning of the book, like her past, as she talks about her life in LA, you understand all her insecurities, you know, like she didn't like to be in the crowded room, she just wanted to be home, you know, her disconnect with people. And then, like, but now she has this thriving community where she's the beacon, right? They're all there for her. Everyone shows up for
Well, and
her.
they keep coming back.
Yeah.
And
That's
it
the big
forces her.
thing.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know
No,
I was
you're
gonna
fine.
say.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it also forces her to like confront like that her pattern of running away. You know, because she ran away from Bakersfield, she ran away from LA, but now she's somewhere she doesn't want to run away. So she needs to confront why she does it. You know, so like it all tied in for me. All of that with her mom, everything with Christopher. Like I felt like Maisie did a really good job of just like tying everything in, and wrapping it up. So.
Stacy in the comments on YouTube says, "I don't understand why Christopher was bidding so high." And I do. I think that it was one, he was trying to apologize for his actions, but also I think he was trying to emulate the romantic Christmas hero that he plays. So I think that it's a little bit of both. He was playing his part, but
Well, she talked
also,
about like how he's like a really charming guy. Like he's not a great actor, but he's very charismatic.
So I just think that that was also to kind of show that he plays a part. He doesn't necessarily, he's not necessarily himself. He plays a part.
Well, and I think that's part of it because he like has called her a couple times since he found out that she
Right, that
was
Zoom
there.
meeting with the crazy production
Well, because
community
so they have
theater
this whole
director.
like desert, it's a very desert
Okay.
Christmas, and they're
She's
like
insane.
creating all this stuff and they're inviting people for this auction to raise money for the wildfires. And this producer person, whoever,
Community
like is
theater
so
director,
excited.
it's all you need to know. She was a director in
Yes.
community
So
theater.
she is like, we got this actor. He's in all these Hallmark movies or like Hallmark-esque movies. I don't know if they actually called it Hallmark. But like, and then said his name, and Amelia's like, oh fuck. But
And
she
like
doesn't.
it rolls out of the screen
Yes.
the
But so
next meeting.
nobody, aside from the best friend, knows that she dated this dude.
No,
And
the
they're
best
on a
friend doesn't
Zoom.
even know. Yeah,
No.
she
Not
not till
doesn't even
the
know until
end. She knew his
after.
name, but like didn't know who he was.
Just a
But so they're
first
on.
name. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're on this Zoom meeting with him and they make eye contact. And she's like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
But
Yeah,
then
I
he starts
related
calling her.
to that, like her internal battle of like, do I run? I'm in the front row. Like,
Like
right?
fight or
That's gonna
flight has
draw.
kicked in.
Yeah. I'd have been like putting my purse in front of my face so I could
This is when
like
you wish you had a
something.
hoodie on and
I
could
would have just
like,
pulled my beanie down.
Yeah.
how can I slunch down in my chair?
You can't see my eyes.
Yeah.
I'm not here.
We had a dog early on in our relationship that would stick his head under the bed when you would call him and he didn't want to come. He would stick his head,
So
and it
you couldn't see
basically,
him.
if I can't see you, you can't see me. And he was like a 250-pound Saint Bernard. Like everybody could see you, dude. You aren't really hiding. But that was kind of that moment. Like, okay. Is there anything else in this book that anybody wants to talk about?
I will say that at one point she compares him to a flowerless chocolate tort of a man. And I was like, okay, sign me up. And I've been trying to get my husband to make me one ever since I read it. Just I'll let you know if I can talk him into it.
Okay, you let us know.
So
Just
when
so
I
we're
read
clear.
that, I thought of, because we had flowerless chocolate tarts when we went to Bluegrass.
Oh,
And
yeah.
they were so, like,
They're
yeah.
amazing.
But they were so rich. Like, I was like, oh, I can't eat this. Yeah. So then I was like, dude, maybe you're too much.
Yeah, it's like a once a year thing, but I've decided like right now is my once a year.
This
Right
is
now.
the time.
Well, the world is kind of on fire, so you
That's,
deserve a
yeah.
flowerless chocolate tort. And see, I'm over here thinking, how can I convince Mike to make bread this weekend? Because I really, those rolls from Thanksgiving, I really want rolls.
Yeah,
Well, you didn't
that's
eat
fair.
them because
No, but my
this
kids talk about them. Like, yeah.
you're welcome.
And the bacon.
And the bacon. Her children, I made bacon to go on the Brussels sprouts. And her children are like, as soon as they smell like a hint of bacon, they're like, is that bacon? Are we having bacon? I'm like, it's not a side dish.
It's
It's
like my dog, you open the bacon package and he runs.
Yes,
They
that's my
like
children.
he just knows the package, so.
So I made extra and each child got a slice of bacon. They wanted that more than they wanted the steak at
They did.
Thanksgiving. It was so
I
funny.
mean,
It is
they know
bacon.
what's good.
the nativity scene practice where yes. he pretends to be the horse and she's just like
And then she has to be the camel.
She has to be the camel. Right. Which, did we know a camel was a barnyard animal? Did we know this?
I mean, it was at the nativity, I think, but it's
not
a barnyard animal.
But she refers to the older lady or the production lady was like, and the barnyard animals. Anyway.
This is just, it's such a good story, and it's just know you're going to be up in your feels when you read this book.
It does have some big feels. Okay, so let's do our thumbs up, thumbs down, and then if you liked this, we think you should try this. Leah, thumbs up, thumbs down.
It is a big thumbs up for me. This is a book that I will read again. I will recommend it. Actually, I almost texted my mom today to be like, you need to read this book, but I didn't, so, but I will be.
Yeah,
it just, it's a really great story.
Yeah. Amanda, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs, oh, yeah. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Jenny, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up. I definitely think there's like something everyone can relate to and kind of like learn from in this story.
It's a thumbs up for me. We didn't talk about it, but Stephanie Rose did an amazing job on the audiobook. I listened to the audio, thoroughly enjoyed it. The emotion, the inflection, she did a really great job. So, and it, you didn't miss Mister's POV. I felt like this was her reading her diary to me almost. Okay. So if somebody really likes this book, maybe that they needed a good cathartic cry romance or just a fling. What are some titles that we think are good comparisons?
Very different books.
Yeah. Well, somebody said, how does this book compare to Maisie's other books? So Maisie does actually like to play with loss and grief in her books. But usually, and she also has lots of them that deal with like family, like somebody coming in and their family is not as, she deals with lots of found family. And she likes to Disney a lot of parents. She does like to play with emotion because like her Pine Ranch series, I think is what it's called. There's lots of emotion in that. And like the heroine in that book, her parents are trash, but it's like 9 found family siblings, foster kids that were all raised together, you know, working through some stuff. So. But she does like to sprinkle humor in. So, I don't know. I like a Maisie Yates book. I always know I'm going to get a quality story when I read her books. Was this anybody else's first Maisie?
It was mine.
My first. We're all kicked off.
Yeah. Maybe we'll pick Becky off the island.
There are just too many books.
There are too many books.
She has
Amanda
a lot.
And I had this we had this conversation today.
Because
the like little blurb at the end even says like she has over 100 books. I'm like, no wonder you had a daily word count, lady. Like
upside though, she does a lot of categories, so they're not super long.
They're shorter books. Okay, so if somebody likes this, what else should they try?
I only have one.
Go for it.
So I'll go first. The King of Nothing.
I just wrote that one down while we were sitting here because I thought about it.
That is, they're both dealing with grief. It is kind of like a, it's not really vacation, but they are both away from where they normally call home. Like if you haven't read that book, please just read that book. Alora and Roman are just, I mean, big feels in that one. Huge feels.
Well, and he's running from grief.
Yeah. And so, she's not running from it, but she's dealing with it. So kind of similar to Amelia.
Yeah.
They're both like working through it. It's hard.
That there's some big feels. I also think Forever is another one by Aurora Rose Reynolds that has kind of the grief and also the relationships and when it's worth pursuing and when it's worth walking away. I think there's a lot in that book of that too.
Especially also, one is just her POV also. So you get that like side of it too.
Is King of Nothing just her POV?
No, it's dual.
No, it's dual.
Okay.
Yeah.
couldn't remember.
I have one also, just yeah. one, because I looked at the list and I didn't have anything else to contribute. So Just One Night by Charity Farrell. So he is a widower. She has only been, she had passed away about a year before that, and they hook up and he like freaks out. And then the rest of the story is like what the aftermath of the hookup. But yeah. it's done really well, because like for I'd say like 85% of the book, like he is still like struggling, but it makes sense. And it, you know how we read Lorenzo, and by the end of Lorenzo, I was like, I don't know if I really believe it, that he like the that like the pat like the wife that had passed is still very much in the relationship.
There were three this people one, in I didn't that feel relationship. That way. Yeah. You can steal any of the ones that were on my list. I just went looking. It's okay.
You can talk about them.
Jenny, did
actually
you
have one?
Okay. Yeah.
Igniting Ivy by Samantha Christie.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. It's the same, like, loss of pregnancy and aftermath and the grief. And that has some messy in it.
Oh, she likes messy.
I also think.
Yeah. But
Danica's first book in her hockey series, I think it's, is it Game On? I think that book, that book, she's a widow, and it also is dealing with pregnancy and loss.
Like, yeah.
Something Unexpected.
Not Game On.
Not Game. What's the first? It's the first one. Dinah.
Yeah,
Something Unexpected by Vi Keelan. She, the grief is present. Like,
oh, that's.
That's the one where. Grandma's dying and is taking the hospice
They're on the
approach.
Grief tour, basically.
Yeah, the grief tour. That book was deep in feels. But it was so good. If you want just a fling, the
Take the Shot.
Take the Danica Shot Flynn. By Danica Flynn is another good one. The Tryst by Lauren Blakely is also a good, it's a fling, not really grief, but fling. Where Waves Break by Julia Woof. Again, it's a fling, but it's also dealing with some grief and loss of relationships, cutting people out of your lives. The Holiday Trap by Roan Parrish. Again, it's a vacation fling. Beyond the Team by Kaylee Ryan, vacation fling. The Summer Proposal by Vi Keeland. If it didn't bother you that they were both keeping secrets in this book, because, you know, sometimes keeping a secret, even from the reader, can, by the end, you as a reader feel betrayed on top of the characters feeling betrayed.
Oh, yes.
The Summer Proposal by Vi Keeland, he is keeping a secret from her. And you know pieces, but you don't know it all. And so that's one of those where you're like...
I was mad at him.
You were mad at him? I was mad at him, but then he groveled really well. So I wasn't
as mad
at
him. He did grovel well, but I was mad at him.
That's fair. That's fair. Make It Sweet by Kristen Callahan. If you liked the flowerless chocolate torte comment, read that book, because baking for her is his love language.
I'll have to move that up. I'm all over the place, but yeah.
It's so good. That book is so good. Hooking Up by Helena Hunting. It's the grief of a relationship being over, but also a vacation fling. Her groom gets a blowjob at their wedding reception, and it's casted over the microphone that he's mic'd with. And she walks out of her wedding and goes on a
As
vacation.
One should.
Right?
Maybe rip up that like marriage license.
Yeah, don't file that. Summer Rental by Mary Kay Andrews. It's also, she inherits a motel and, or summer rental. And there's some grief in that one also. And then Tour Wars by Carla Luna, again, vacation fling. I think that's all I have. Did I skip miss any other books?
I don't think.
I don't know. I didn't know I needed
this
the
card
cry.
Until like 5 minutes before I can jump on here.
Usually until she says it and I'm like, oh.
You had a bunch that I thought of, or a couple that I thought of, and then like that was really my only other
yeah.
Like, oh,
like I said,
vacation Vacation Fling, also, I would say The Legacy by Dylan Allen is really good, especially if you want to like he doesn't want to be in a relationship, like they don't, you know, there's big almost kind of like family drama with that one too, but that's a really good Vacation Fling one.
I need to move Dylan Allen up on my TBR. She's been there for too long.
It's like very big like Dallas Dynasty vibes in the series. Like
Oh, I'm there for
I
that.
really want to get back to book two.
I
It's
love those like
seeming good.
saga chaos books.
Maybe we need to move that up to our Sip and Discuss TBR.
Maybe.
Anyway, thank you everyone for joining us for this episode of Buzzing About Romance. Don't forget, we'll be back this Sunday for more romance book fun. We are going to provide you with the ultimate big game TBR. And the big game we're referring to is the Super Bowl. But you can't say Super Bowl because you'll get fired.
But you had to clarify.
But I wanted to clarify it. You know, just make a note.
Well, you'd never know what kind of big game we might be talking about.
Right. I mean, I did the episode with Heather where I said the title was Going to the Club, and we talked about book clubs. Do you know how many nasty messages I got from people that were like, I thought you were going to talk about like sex clubs, and now you're talking about book club? And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
I mean,
I thought
fair.
The same thing though, so I can't say anything.
She hasn't gone on her field trip yet. She can't do that episode.
We need to do some research.
That's true.
I bet Heather would go on a research trip for us to that. You know, she'd be a total looky-loo. I'm still, what was the comment that she said the other day? Group your poop or something?
Oh, yeah. Oh, forget. Like, but
yes. Yes.
I was dying. Anyway.
I couldn't handle that. Like, I shut down after that for a little bit.
Mark your calendars for next Wednesday, where we are diving into Blindsided by Eden Finley. This is a book that Heather has declared she will accept no criticism on.
Oh, Lindsay said it too.
And Lindsay said it too, so.
I mean, that's a pretty high order for Lindsay.
Right?
It is.
So we all should be reading that this week and getting ready for next. Anyway, thanks everybody for hanging out with us tonight.
Of course.
Until next time, everyone.
Happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.